Oral questions by members.
Member for Abbotsford West.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. We all remember last fall's famous leaked memo disclosing the Premier's demand for a big and shiny pre-election announcement. Well, the largest inflationary budget deficit in the history of BC certainly qualifies as big. But it turns out the shiny bauble is going to be a paltry rebate from BC Hydro that works out to about 25 cents per day. But if that isn't bad enough, Mr. Speaker, we now know that in a classic NDP rebate and switch, 3 weeks ago, the Cabinet signed off on an order changing the definition of inflation in a way that would actually allow for a BC Hydro rate increase of up to 16%. So my question is this: why is the Premier publicly telling British Columbians that rate increases will be held to the annual rate of inflation? At the same time, he and the Cabinet are quietly signing orders that would allow for a rate increase of up to five times that amount.
Minister of Energy, Mines and Low Carbon Innovation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, I'm sorry to hear that the member doesn't feel that providing a rebate to people at a time when they're facing the cost of inflation and high interest rates, the high cost of housing, the high cost of childcare, all of the things that we're doing to provide money for people, put it back in their pockets. I'm sorry to hear that the member doesn't think that's a good
members,
thing to do.
Members, let Speaker, the minister finish her answer, please.
Mr. Speaker, we know that people are struggling right now, and that's why the BC Electricity Affordability Rebate puts money back on through people's hydro bills back into their pockets so they can spend it on the things we know they need and want to do that. But Mr. Speaker, that's not the only action our government is taking to help people with the cost of living. Reducing child care fees, reducing ICBC premiums, eliminating several years ago one of the biggest tax cuts in history here, eliminating MSP premiums, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we know that people need help, and that's why our government is here at people's backs, and we're going to continue to support them in every way that we can. Thank you.
Abbotsford West supplemental.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. Well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there are going to be parades in towns across British Columbia celebrating that 25 cents a day. It's possible. But I think what's more likely, Mr. Speaker, is that people are going to see through the manipulation. The manipulation that involves the Premier and now Minister touting a bauble that equates to 25 cents a day, pretending to provide assurance that future increases will be at the annual rate of inflation, when in fact they are quietly signing Cabinet orders that would allow for a post-election rate increase of five times that amount, Mr. Speaker. On top of that, clear evidence that the Minister, the Premier, the government won't take no for an answer. After firing the Chair and the CEO of the Utilities Commission, BC Hydro has launched an unprecedented four reconsideration requests, Mr. Speaker. The question again to the Premier: with the possibility of a rate increase of up to 16% looming after the next election, why should British Columbians derive any comfort from the Premier's big and shiny 25 cent pre-election promise?
Minister.
Once again, Mr. Speaker, I find it astonishing that somebody would laugh at a rebate people are getting on their BC Hydro bills. The fact that We understand that people are facing challenges right now, and they need every bit of help they can get, Mr. Speaker. But, Mr. Speaker, the member's asking questions about BC Hydro, and I guess I'm glad he is, because I think he doesn't want to talk about their government's record on BC Hydro when they were on this side of the House. Mr. Speaker, under their 10-year rates plan, families today would be paying $140 more on their BC Hydro bill than they are now. Mr. Speaker, under their leadership, rates skyrocketed 80%. That's 5% a year on average over the 16 years on this side of the House. Mr. Speaker, we're not doing that. We understand that people need affordable energy rates. We're taking action. BC Hydro's last application for rates increase holds at 2.3% a year. Mr. Speaker, we're working hard to make sure people have the energy they need, the efficient appliance they need, the ability to switch to heat pumps, and, Mr. Speaker, affordable energy bills. Thank you.
Member for Kamloops North Thompson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, that will be literally cold comfort for people when they're not able to meet the energy demands in the next cold snap when this government cuts access to gas and we don't have enough electricity. But let's be clear, Mr. Speaker, this government, by their own words in 2017, Site C was on time and on budget. Then they opposed Site C, and it's more than doubled in cost. Then they blocked First Nations clean energy projects, saying that they weren't a good value for people either. And now they're trying to re-engage them at a higher cost to ratepayers. They're playing politics with the finances of BC Hydro, plain and simple, with the rebate and switch scheme that they've got going. Meanwhile, the Premier is tripling the carbon tax on families forced to choose between heating their homes and putting food on the table. Imagine the frustration of those families that are reliant on natural gas, Mr. Speaker, when they realize with the rebate and switch program they're going to get 25 cents a day for 1 year only, and then their rates are going to go up by 16% next year. Will the Premier deliver real relief by removing the carbon tax on all home heating today?
Minister of Energy and Mines.
Mr. Speaker, people's hydro rates and bills are not going to go up 16% next year. That's just fabulous math on the member's part, but simply not true. And in fact, over the last 6 years, we have kept BC Hydro rate increases below the cumulative cost of inflation. Mr. Speaker, the member mentions the last cold snap. We were able to supply electricity to our neighbours, Alberta, at a time when they needed it most. That's because BC Hydro is operating a resilient system.
Member.
That's because BC Hydro is
operating. Just hold it, Minister. Members, please continue.
That's because BC Hydro is operating a resilient system, one that we know needs to adapt and change given the way climate is changing. That's why we have the spring call for power coming in April to diversify the sources of energy that we use here in British Columbia, to add more electricity to our growing economy, to the people who are moving here to BC. That's why BC Hydro's 10-year capital plan is $36 billion. Mr. Speaker, we're going to deliver clean, safe, reliable, affordable energy to British Columbians for years to come. Thank you.
Kamloops North Thompson, supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You'd think the Minister of Energy would also want to acknowledge the reason we got through the cold snap was two-thirds of the energy consumed in British Columbia then was provided by natural gas, not electricity. Bad news for the minister, it's their order in council that is trying to redefine and recalculate what inflation actually means for BC Hydro. So imagine how the families feel upon discovering that the NDP's solution to their inflation struggles was to simply change the definition of inflation, Mr. Speaker. Removing the carbon tax on home heating would provide a genuine rebate, offering real relief and making life more affordable for people. Tax cuts drove down the inflationary pressures in Alberta and Saskatchewan, which is exactly what BC United would do, Mr. Speaker. But the Premier insists on driving up the cost of gas, rent, groceries and home heating every single day while families continue to suffer. Why is this Premier living in an alternate reality, refusing to give real relief from inflation, such as cutting the carbon tax on home heating today?
Minister.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, you know, one thing we all do know is that the world is changing around us and climate change is having a real impact, and people want to do their part in fighting pollution and they want to be able to afford their energy bills. That's why our government continues to take action. The BC Electricity Affordability Credit, nothing to laugh at. Again, I'm so disappointed to hear that somebody would think this is not a good idea to help people at a time when they need that help the most. Mr. Speaker, we're going to continue to do
Members.
That. We're going to continue to help people with costs. We're going to continue to deliver more housing. We're going to continue our work on childcare spaces, reducing fees for people, reducing ICBC rates, providing free contraception. Mr. Speaker, I could go on and on. This government has people's backs, and we will not stop.
House Leader of Third Party.
Mr. Speaker, our former Social Democratic government here claims to look after the most vulnerable people in British Columbia, but their actions fail to meet their rhetoric on almost every, including this bill, actually, that we're just going through, the one that was just tabled today. Clause by clause debate on that bill is going to be interesting. But when a person's estate and their next of kin can't afford their funeral, Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Social Development and Poverty Reduction pays for basic funeral services, but they won't pay for a grave marker. So this government is burying people in unmarked graves. The cost to the minister is about $850 each, or $3.3 million a year. That's about 0.004% of our $89 billion budget. So why has this minister failed the most vulnerable people in our society so miserably? To the Minister of Social Development and Poverty Reduction, why did she fail to secure the funds to provide our lowest income citizens the dignity of a basic grave marker?
Minister of Social Development and Poverty Reduction.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. All people deserve dignity in death. In the cases when people cannot afford it, then our ministry does pay for the costs of the necessary funeral costs. That includes costs of cremation and burial, the services of a funeral home, maybe a small service for the family to mourn. Families and loved ones can choose the funeral home of their choice. And funeral homes take great care with record keeping to treat people's remains respectfully. Families are able to choose the burial for their loved one, the form of it, and there's a plot chosen, and families can go to visit their departed family members and to pay their respects. I have been meeting with the BC Funeral Association. I understand their concern about costs given global inflation. They haven't raised the grave markers question, but we'll continue to meet with the industry and to hear from people across the province around how we can best support families who are of low income at the most difficult time.
House Leader, Third Party Supplemental.
This issue was canvassed with the government last year in budget estimates. I believe that there was a story in the Times Colonist about this. The funeral services organization has reached out to our constituency office to raise this issue. We've raised this issue with the minister in the weeks leading up to this spring session. We've had considerable back and forth with the minister's staff. It amounts to about a $3.3 million spend in an $89 billion budget. And the response was that the minister wasn't able to convince the finance minister to be able to provide those funds for the most vulnerable, lowest income residents in our society to have a basic grave marker. As the minister said, all of the other costs, Mr. Speaker, are covered, and they're outlined in the legislation. A simple change could allow for people to have in perpetuity a grave marker. But this government continues to make excuses. They made excuses last spring. They're making excuses today, pretending like this is a new issue. Mr. Speaker, to the Minister of Social Development and Poverty Reduction, why has this minister failed to provide the basic dignity of a basic grave marker to the lowest income citizens in our society?
Minister.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. All people in British Columbia deserve a dignified burial. That is what our existing budget funds. With the funeral of service providers taking great care that families are able to visit the grave of a loved one, the family having chosen the place, the funeral service, and the decision about cremation versus burial. We continue to work with the Funeral Association. We're very grateful to the funeral service providers across British Columbia that continue to provide services to people who are low income at their very most difficult time. We continue to be in active conversation with them about the costs of the existing services, given the cost, the terribly increased cost of service provision because of global inflation. This has not been on their list of wishes. There are other pieces that they have ahead of grave markers, but we continue to hear from people across the province about their priorities and how it is that they want us to invest and care for people at the most difficult time.
House Leader of the Fourth Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. In 2021, this government created Tiny Town. They took 30 people from local shelters and dropped them into shipping containers located in the heart of Victoria's North Park neighborhood. Residents of North Park describe a horror show. Piles of garbage, night brawls, defecation, street sex, constant thefts and break-ins. One resident, Jody Sigsworth, was awakened in the middle of the night to find a man she did not know standing at the foot of her bed with his flashlight pointed in her face. Victoria families thought their nightmare had finally ended when the project was terminated, rightfully so, last September after 2.5 years of chaos. But they've just been told that the NDP is bringing Tiny Town back. Mr. Speaker, to the Premier, there aren't any tiny towns in Vancouver's Point Grey. Why doesn't he be the change he wants to see in this world and surround his own family, who live in one of the richest neighborhoods in North America, with sea cans harboring criminals?
Members, Minister of Housing.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. And I cannot believe the members talking about the most vulnerable people in our communities that way, dropping them off in shipping containers in communities. I mean, if you want an example of Trump-style politics coming to British Columbia, Honourable Speaker, that question right there is it. Okay. Honourable Speaker, people are struggling in our communities. We have to find ways to ensure that they get access to housing so that we can provide them the supports that they need so they can find stability in their lives. Now, this project the member talks about has been in the community for a few years. Certainly had some challenges early on, but after adjustments were made to the programming, to staffing, we were able to provide a lot of people supports. In fact, a lot of people were able to get the stability in their lives that they needed to be able to get back into community, get back into employment, connect with families again, Honourable Speaker. That's the type of dignified support I think all people in this House want to see in their communities. Now, the member talks about the Premier. He knows there's supportive housing sites in the Premier's riding. There's supportive housing sites in all our communities. We need to find ways to support everyone where they are, Honourable Speaker. We're proud of that work. We're going to work with the community. We're working with the City of Vancouver, Victoria. We're working with the Victoria Police, who have also shared with us that they believe that that site now, because of the changes that have been made, was actually fairly safe in the community, Honourable Speaker. This is from the Victoria Police Chief. So we're going to continue to work with our partners to support the most vulnerable people in our communities.
House Leader of the Fourth Party, supplemental.
I guess that's why they cancelled that program, Mr. Speaker. It was so safe. Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Housing has just awarded the contract to run a new Victoria shelter to Solid Outreach Society. This is a tax-funded group who pays employees $30 an hour to hand deliver crack pipes, munchies, and marijuana to addicts tenting in Victoria playgrounds. So, my question to the minister, will he at least let taxpayers know what flavor of Doritos our taxes will be paying for Victoria's newest housing project?
Minister of Housing.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, we won't take lectures from a person who, when he was mayor of Abbotsford, dumped manure on homeless campments. Who was the mayor of Abbotsford dumping manure on homeless encampments as his way of addressing challenges for homelessness. So we're not taking any advice from this member. How to ensure that the most vulnerable people have supports. We're going to continue to work with communities to find ways to make sure people are safe, that they have the supports they need, Honourable Speaker. We are in challenging times, not only in BC, but across North America. We are committed to continue to support the most vulnerable people in our communities.
Member for Surrey South.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. As a society, we have an obligation to provide care for the most vulnerable, including involuntary care when necessary. Honourable Speaker, we failed that duty with Stephanie Lawrence, who died at just, 15 from a fentanyl overdose. Brenda Doherty, Stephanie's mum, joins us today seeking answers and action. More lip service from the Premier on involuntary care for vulnerable youth is simply not good enough. How many more young lives must be lost before this Premier acts? Will he please commit today to support involuntary care for our most vulnerable youth, either by calling the opposition's private member's bill or by introducing his own? Thank you.
Minister of Mental Health and Addictions.
Thank you very much, Honourable Speaker, and I thank the member across the way and everyone in this House who is bringing forward concerns, a concern that we share with regard to how we can best protect and provide services and supports that youth in our communities need. We have made significant investments over the last number of years to build up a system of care and support for children and youth in our healthcare system, in our mental health care system. And we know, of course, that that there is more to do. But just yesterday, we announced that one of the largest investments in child and youth mental health to get in and ensure that we can be reaching in the river upstream, be providing early intervention and prevention services for youth. Out of our 2022 budget, we invested $75 million in an early psychosis intervention program in our hospitals. We are engaged in a system and in a process that is transforming inside our healthcare system how we are providing care and support for youth who need it to make sure that we can be there when they are in crisis and as they transition out into community services. We'll continue to do that work. We'll continue to work with community partners, our health authorities, all partners in order to ensure that we can protect youth in our province.
Member for Kelowna Mission.
The release of convicted repeat sex offender Taylor Duick into our community without warning is a complete violation of trust between this NDP government and those it is supposed to serve. At no point was anyone told about this predator's criminal record, the condition that he have one-to-one supervision at all times, and that he was not to be around children. While children were arriving for after-school lessons, this convicted child molester's supervisor sat in the parking lot, in his vehicle, for 2.5 hours. The result was an 11-year-old girl being cornered and sexually assaulted in the bathroom by this predator. How can this NDP government have allowed this total failure to happen? And who is going to take responsibility for this complete and utter failure so it never happens again?
Minister of Public Safety and Solicitor General.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and I thank the member for the question. And as the member will know, when this came to our attention last week, the first thing I did was, one, express our extreme disgust and anger at what is taking place, and immediately ordered a full investigation and accounting of all provincial, federal agencies involved and officials involved to get to the bottom, to find out exactly what happened. Was it a systemic failure, or was it a failure of an individual? That work is underway to ensure that this never happens again. And so this government most certainly has taken action.
Member supplemental.
No. Someone has to be accountable. This 11-year-old girl deserves better. Our community is traumatized. That 11-year-old is traumatized. And our communities are not going to be protected by some investigation and analysis and report. People are sick and tired of the premier and this minister's feigned indignation in the face of horrific failures that leave innocent people victimized, only to see them do absolutely nothing to prevent it from happening again. Make no mistake, the Premier and this NDP government, they're the ones, they're the architects of this system. The Premier was the former Attorney General and is now Premier. It's under his watch that the system prioritized this sexual predator's privacy over the safety and well-being of our children. Over the safety and well-being of that 11-year-old girl. With Taylor Duick's bail hearing tomorrow, parents and my entire community are traumatized and fearful that he's going to come back if he's released. The Premier needs to be held accountable and needs to stop prioritizing the rights of a pedophile over the rights of a community to feel safe. Who is going to take responsibility for this total failure to protect our children?
Attorney General.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I hear the passion and anger in the member's question, and I share that anger. I know the Solicitor General very quickly ordered an investigation. We need to get to the bottom of this. An 11-year-old child has been hurt, and we as a government take that extremely seriously. We need to get to the bottom of it. We need to find out what happened to make sure this never happens again in this province to another child. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Opposition House Leader.
Mr. Speaker, British Columbians are not just outraged by the release of a repeat sex offender in Kelowna. Peter Warren is a pedophile who has been released in Richmond 3 times. 3 times just in the past 2 weeks, despite using Snapchat to lure underage children. First, he was arrested on February 21st and promptly released on bail. He was then rearrested on February 23rd when he immediately breached his bail condition, which includes not being alone with anyone under the age of 18 and not going to any park, only to then be released on bail a second time. And now this pedophile has been arrested again for going back to the same park. But, Mr. Speaker, unbelievably, he has been released a third time on bail. British Columbians are saying enough is enough. How can this Premier possibly defend this catch-and-release treatment of dangerous pedophiles, resulting in monsters like this individual and the one previously quoted by the member from Kelowna Mission, resulting in people like these being released back into the community over and over and over again? It's got to stop.
Attorney General.
I want to thank the member for the question. We need to make sure that our communities are safe. We need to make the investments necessary to make sure that our communities are safe. Our government is working very hard to change federal laws. We led the charge to change the bail of the law of the land in Canada to make sure that repeat violent offenders were not released into our communities. We've stood up resources directed at repeat offenders that are there to make sure that those offenders are treated in the way that keeps communities safe. Mr. Speaker, when you hear stories like that, I think British Columbians want to make sure that their government is taking action. We are listening, we are learning, and we are taking action. And I will continue to do that in my role as Attorney General. I know the Solicitor General and the whole of government will do that when it comes to this. Thank you.
The bell ends the question period.